he had friends, Steve and Anita, and their daughter, Rachel, was brutally murdered, and her body was tossed aside, and she was abused, and they found her body out in Oregon, this family, and they called Ram Dass and asked him, how can we find spirituality? How can we be in spirit when things such as this are taking place in the world, and our only daughter we've lost? And they were devastated, didn't know how to handle such a situation. And Ram Dass wrote them a letter, and I want to share the letter with you so you'll have an understanding of why I feel the way I do about this man. So this is what he wrote to Steve and Anita. Rachel finished her work on Earth and left the stage in a manner that leaves those of us left behind with a cry of agony in our hearts as the fragile thread of our faith is dealt with so violently. Is anyone strong enough to stay conscious through such teachings as you are receiving? Probably very few. And even they would only have a whisper of equanimity and peace amidst the screaming trumpets of their rage, grief, horror, and desolation. I can't assuage your pain with any words, nor should I, for your pain is Rachel's legacy to you. Not that she or I would inflict such pain by choice, but there it is. And it must burn its purifying way to completion, for something in you dies when you bear the unbearable. And it is only in that dark night of the soul that you are prepared to see as God sees and to love as God loves. Now is the time to let your grief find expression, no false strength. Now is the time to sit quietly and speak to Rachel. Thank her for being with you these few years and encourage her to go on with whatever her work is, knowing that you will grow in compassion and wisdom from this experience. In my heart, I know that you and she will meet again and again. And I recognize the many ways in which you have known each other. And when you meet, you will know in a flash what now it is not given to you to know. Why this had to be the way it was. Our rational minds can never understand what has happened, but our hearts, if we keep them open to God, will find their own intuitive way. Rachel came through you to do her work on Earth, which includes her manner of death. Now her soul is free, and the love that you can share with her is invulnerable to the winds of changing time and space. In that deep love, please include me. Love, Ram Dass. See, inspiration isn't just something that we get from feeling good. We can return to spirit even in moments such as this. And I include this letter because I know there are those out there who have had experiences in which you just wonder, how can I get through this? And how can I find inspiration even in this? I don't think there's ever been a more beautiful letter written about that. And now you know why I love this man so much and why I want him to have that home and have the world come to him on Maui. And if you go there, he'll welcome you. Well, that's who he is. See, we can receive inspiration and we can provide inspiration in a multitude of ways. I've written a few examples out of these things that have happened that inspired me in my life. I remember when I got out of the service in 1962, and in 1963 there was this horror that the world was facing called the Cuban Missile Crisis. I don't know if those of you are old enough to remember that, but it was a time when we really thought in this country that we were facing nuclear war. I was 23 years old. And the headlines every day were there's going to be an exchange of nuclear weapons between the Soviet Union, a man named Khrushchev, and the President John F. Kennedy, when the world was on the brink of nuclear annihilation, or at least we thought we were. And I remember all of the people that were surrounding President Kennedy, the hawks telling the president, advising him, we'll nuke Havana. We'll drop a nuclear bomb on Cuba and we'll just wipe Cuba off of the map. I mean, those were some of the pieces of advice that he was being given. And others were saying, we'll have a confrontation with Khrushchev, he'll back down. And others were saying, but he won't back down, and if he doesn't, and the president would ask this question and that question. And one of the things that President Kennedy very strongly believed, he had said it on several occasions, was that the most important job of the President of the United States is to keep the country out of war. That's the number one and only important job the President faces. Not anything else, just to keep us out of war. And I remember after hearing all of this advice and listening to the pros and cons and what to do and what not to do and he had to make the final decision on what was going to happen. He went into the Oval Office and sat there by himself. And he made conscious contact with God in those moments and asked for the right guidance. He suspended all of the other kinds of influences that were around him and just went to that quiet place within himself and came up with the idea of a blockade and a way to keep this thing from escalating into what might destroy humanity as we know it on the planet. President Kennedy, as a young 23-year-old veteran of the service, inspired me. Not because he had a beautiful wife, and not because he was young and handsome, and not because he was a good speaker. Because in time of crisis, he went within and trusted his spirit. He was always a great inspiration to me. I think of being in South Africa lecturing. Years before I went to South Africa, I hosted a show called Late Night America on PBS. Dennis Holey was the host, and he asked me to fill in for him on this national television show. And my first guest was a man named Dick Gregory, who was a comedian out of San Francisco. I had just run a marathon, and I was going to talk a little bit about what it was like to run a marathon because I heard that he was a runner, and I was really sort of proud that I'd gotten through 26 miles and I was still standing and alive. Dick Gregory came on, and I found out in the notes before I interviewed him that he ran 52 miles a day, that's two marathons, every day for something like 73 consecutive days as he ran from Los Angeles to New York in the ruts of the side of the road to protest the war in Vietnam. So I decided not to talk about my marathon experience. And instead we talked about South Africa because that's what Dick wanted to talk about. And he told me, he said, you will be a great voice for freedom in the world. He said, you have to go to South Africa. I said, why? I was a young man, I didn't have any real consciousness about what was happening in South Africa, probably as much as I should have had at that time. He said, there's a system called apartheid. That system is the only place left on the planet where a certain number of people, because of their race, have been designated to be inferior by law. He said, it's not a problem that some people think some people are inferior. He said, that will all pass. But when the laws are on the books, those laws have to be overturned, and you have to be a voice for that.